Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American, Canadian, and London-based singer, songwriter, TV presenter, and author Stacey Jackson joins us for the second time on the Celeb Savant podcast. Stacey's first hit record and music career kickstarted at 40 after she took 15 years off to raise her four kids. Her success later in life while juggling a large family earned her being dubbed the grown-up Hannah Montana by the press. As Stacey joins us for the second time on the Celeb Savant podcast, she tells us about her book, How a Gangster Rapper Made Me a Better Mom, which is being released in 2024, and details of her new album and tour, which are also happening in 2024. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Stacey Jackson. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Well, I want to say beautiful London, because there is not a cloud in the sky today. It's cold, but it's spectacular. And I really love this weather. I don't like when it's like 10 or 15 degrees out and raining and gray. And blah. I prefer that it's cold, but like clear skies and you could still go for a run in the park. And I love it. So I'm in London.
And you're doing good?
Yeah. It was a great Christmas with all my family. I was telling you, all my kids live all around the world. So I got to be with all of them and their girlfriends. So it's like, you know, starting a new phase of my life too, when you have to, all of a sudden my family's getting bigger, which is nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, so no, it was good. And I have a very big 2024 ahead of me, as you know. Nice. So it's all go, go, go. I'm trying to get through all of the planning stages of everything. But it's a big year. It's exciting.
So before we dive into what's coming up, Stacey was on the Celeb Savant podcast. If you are not aware, go find that previous episode. So she was aired, or that episode came out in the last part of 2022. So Stacey, since we last spoke, what happened in the last year or so before we dive into what's coming?
I think we spoke about, I think you reached out to me because I had a television series, Stacey Jackson in the 80s. So I did three seasons of that on Sky here and 54 episodes, which was intense, and it ran on Sky. And then it didn't get picked up again because the network, the network ended up skewing slightly even older. It's now called Music and Memories, and it's now, I don't think it's on Sky anymore. So it ran its course, and it was very lucky for me because it was just such a great opportunity, because it also happened around COVID. So I wasn't touring. And so it really filled a fantastic gap and also sort of established me in the sort of 80s as an 80s guru, I guess. Yeah. And during that time, I started writing again, and I was very much influenced by, obviously, growing up in the 80s and then, of course, having done that show. So I recorded a new album during that time. Most of it, all the songs, or most of the songs with an 80s influence to it. In fact, I did even a couple of covers. The album actually comes out this year, all 80s covers. So even my original material has that sort of that sort of sound of the era. And we've been releasing single after single. And I also completed my book, which, of course, takes a while to actually get published because there's various ways to go about it. And obviously, we talked about doing a self-publishing scenario, but it got picked up by a publisher. So it's now in the hands of, and the fate is now in the hands of a publisher, and it's coming out. The paperback comes out the end of February, beginning of March, and the ebook is ready to order now, actually. So it's all been insanely busy for me, but this year I think is going to be the sort of pinnacle, because I'm going to be on tour for the first time in a long time, and I'm touring a lot, big shows from festivals to arenas to smaller intimate shows. It's going to be a nutty year, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's unpack. I'm very excited about all of this. So first of all,
okay,
how much time did it take to do that show? And when it didn't get picked up, was there a feeling of sort of loss, or it was just like, okay, surrendering and thinking, okay, it's run its course, it's done what it needed to do, let's move into the next phase?
Oh, I loved it so much. That's such a great question. No one's asked me that before. It was definitely a sense of loss, and I was really trying to hold on to it for as long as I could. I probably am still down for it to be picked up on another network, if that was the case. I think 80s is on trend right now. I don't think it's the kind of show that would go out of style. There's so much influence from the 80s, and there's loads of things out there that are, you know, inspired by it. So I just feel that it definitely could still work. So if something came up along those lines, I definitely would not say no. I guess it depends on all the stuff I have going on. I still do a radio show called Liverpool Live here in the UK, where I co-host like a half an hour segment on 80s music. So I still get my fix.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I do miss it. I really do. But, you know, it did get, like I said, it filled a gap during that time where I wasn't touring, and it kicked me up the butt a bit to like get back into the studio and start writing music that I think is of like the 80s influence as a result of that. So, I mean, that it's part of my journey, I guess, right? And I never look back. I'm very, very grateful for having that opportunity. And yeah, if something comes up, I probably won't say no.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got a lot on my plate at the moment, so who knows?
So, yeah, I saw, because as you said, it allowed you to become, in inverted commas, an 80s guru. I saw you were doing a press or something at a couple of festivals in the UK where you were interviewing the various artists, and there were some of your favorite artists. So obviously that led from the show. So it allowed open doors to other opportunities.
Yeah, that's true. And I totally agree with you. And, you know, it's just, you know, I lived through the era. I'm Gen X. So I'm authentically, you know, I actually don't even ask me about lyrics from, you know, yesterday, like even my own songs, I can't remember the words to, but ask me about a song from 1982. For some reason, I know every word. And of course, all the research that I spent having done the show, I really just solidified me in that place. And so I was very, like, I was honored to be asked to be backstage and interview them. I really enjoyed that too. I'm not going to lie. It was quite fun. But I did get a little bit of FOMO watching them come off of stage and being like, darn, I could be up on that. Like, it gave me like a, where do I prefer to be, backstage or on stage? So, again, another sort of, you know, part of my journey and realizing, you know, what I love the most, and, you know, performing is definitely up there for me. So, who knows what's going to happen after this year? I might end up hanging up my high heels, but you never know. I'm really gung-ho about this.
Okay, so now let's unpack a little bit. And I've been messaging you on Instagram whenever I've heard the new songs, loving them. They're so super cool, so 80s, absolutely awesome. You mentioned that there's originals and they're covers. Any sneak peeks of what covers they are? Or if not, what was the thing in your mind that said, okay, I want to cover this song, and that song? What was that process for you?
Teenage. Like, remember how I said I just loved songs growing up in the 80s?
Yeah.
There were songs for me that, like, you know, when you hear something on the radio that's played now from back then, you're like, oh my God, this was such a great song. So it's, you know, and I lived through it. I could tell you where I was when the song originally came out, or who was my boyfriend at the time, or what I was wearing to what party. I mean, the memories I have of all it is so vivid and so in the forefront of my brain. And the sounds of the 80s, I mean, you know, the sort of synth pop or the heavy guitar, or like all of that was so inspiring to me. And I guess I don't really just choose a song. It's sort of like it comes to me, you know, like I said, I might have heard it in a lift somewhere or on the radio, you know, and been like, oh, my God, I know what I could do with this song, or I could update this. And I can also sometimes hear how I would want it to sound. You know, and remember, I'm also really inspired by the fitness world and the club world. So when I hear something, I want to be able to dance to it, or I want to be able to work out to it.
Yeah.
So can I take a song and make it my own and make it in a, so that people want to dance, you know? So that's definitely one of the reasons I choose a particular song. If I can't turn it into anything like creatively, and don't get me wrong, there are people from, let's say, Def Leppard, groupies and fans would be like, oh my God, what has she done to, you know, the song? Because, you know, you have some hardcore rock and rollers out there. The same with my latest cover, Separate Ways, which is a Journey record. And so I'm very lucky that the people that follow me for what I do and the music that I produce, and they like to dance. And, you know, so luckily I'm touching wood. I don't have that much, you know, there aren't any people saying, oh my God, what have you done with that song? People who listen to it understand the art behind turning a song into something of your own. And in terms of the originals, like I said, I'm inspired by the 80s. So I'll just sit at the piano with my producer, or, you know, it just, some of these melodies just come to me, and I really enjoy writing. So it's both sides for me that work equally.
First of all, when does the album come out? Is there a specific date? And how many of the songs are covers and how many songs are the originals?
Two were covers, two have already been released. And so we're doing something really quite new in the sort of digital record label world. Whereas when, like, people don't buy records these days the way they did back in our day. You don't just rock up to an HMV. I mean, now HMV is actually popular. They're selling, you know, vinyl, and it's very trendy. And, you know, but back in the day where you were like holding an actual record in your hand. So they're doing what's called a waterfall release. So basically they'll release every sort of 4 to 8 weeks, depending on how it's doing, a single with you having a lead single and then a bookend single. So the lead single off of this record was Soldier.
Yes.
But we will be putting Flipside on this album only because it didn't have a place to live. It was the theme song for Stacey Jackson in the 80s, which is what was written for. So it didn't have an album to go on. So it'll be on that album. And there'll be two covers, Separate Ways, which I just released like a minute ago. I think it just came out a couple of weeks ago. And Urgent, which, you know, from last year.
Yes, yes.
So the releases have been very slow, every sort of 6 or so weeks. There's still a few more singles to go. And the bookend single is called Superwoman. And that'll probably come out in May. In time for American Mother's Day. And I don't know when you guys celebrate Mother's Day there, but it might be May.
Yeah.
And the album is also called Superwoman. And so it's coming out around that time. So that will be that's the album.
And is it just digital, or will there be physical options as well?
That's an excellent question as well. We've thought about vinyl just as a sort of as a novelty. It'd be fun to see how many people would be inclined to purchase it. Who the heck has record players these days? I mean, my demographic might, unless they were like me and sort of chucked it out after moving 10 times, you know? It'd be just something to research to see if people would be interested in that. In which case you could always press a bunch of vinyl, sell it as merch when you're doing a tour. Yeah. And it's definitely something we've talked about, and we'll see whether or not it's something that we should go ahead and do. But, you know, I also have a book out. So there's, you know, there's a lot of merch happening in my life. Do I need any more?
So before we dive into the book, some stats for you. Last year in the UK alone, 5.9 million vinyls were sold, the biggest since 1990. CDs are in the increase again, and are cassettes. And in fact, it's not the older people that's buying them. It's the teenagers younger people that are buying and loving the physical aesthetic of the holding something. And I find that it's very exciting, because as you know, I love me a CD, but I also find it fantastic that we're getting back to the experience.
The authentic sounds.
Yes, and the experience of buying it. I mean, I recently bought a CD player again, and everyone was like, oh, you won't be able to find CD players anywhere. And I went onto the order platform in South Africa called Takealot. And I literally thought, okay, there'd be one or two options. And there were hundreds of options. I had to narrow it down and narrow it down again. And the experience of listening to it, the CD, compared to the digital, it's like I'm in a stadium at a concert. It's amazing.
It's funny, yeah. I mean, well, CD is also a compressed digital format. So it's, I mean, still, like, if I was going to go out, and yes, it definitely would have a different experience than getting it on an MP3, obviously, because that's even more compressed. But I think in terms of If I was to actually want to go into a store to buy something and make the effort of actually buying a machine to play it, I would probably go the route of vinyl, because that to me is, a whole other different kettle of fish in terms of sounds and sound quality, because there you're also experiencing what it's like to actually be on a record, and the crackling sounds and the scratchy sound and the OG sound that's very, but people are still trying to replicate digitally in the studio, which, obviously this, technology is amazing these days. But that to me would be a reason to go and buy, to go into a store. If
Yes.
I, you know, so I, but I totally hear you. I think, it's a cool trend. I hope that it keeps going. Whoever started it was brilliant. And the stats are amazing to know, because that definitely helps me make decisions. But yeah, and I get a lot of fans asking me, are you putting out CDs? So yeah, it's definitely something for me to think
Think
about. There's no
about. Okay.
question.
Awesome.
I still have my old CDs from, 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, when I did the record with Snoop Dogg, I mean, we totally pressed a bunch of CDs. It's only in the last couple of years that we haven't really felt the need to do it, but I think you're right. Maybe worth it this time.
Maybe for the merch at the concerts. So
Yes.
you reference Snoop Dogg, so perfect segue to your book. It's semi-autobiographical, correct?
Well,
The
it's a
book.
fictionalized book,
Yes.
but loosely based on my life. Yes. So yes, semi.
Let's give the listeners an overview of what a taste of what the book is about.
Oh, that's me now. Okay.
Yeah.
The taste of the book. Okay, so it's basically about a woman who's juggling. She's a single mom, by the way, in this book. So I'm not giving any spoilers away, because you know this right away. She's juggling three kids. She's juggling her own career, and while her husband was alive, she was building her own dreams. And then, of course, subsequent to the passing of her husband, just, pardon my French, but shit hits the fan, and there's just so many things that happen with his own legacy that now falls into her lap. And of course, her juggling her own family, and one's in college and one's a kid, and and then of course the opportunity to record with like the most famous rapper in the world comes up, and how does she handle it all? And of course, she also has a support network of great friends, but then again, she also has, the PTA moms to have to deal with, because she's not a usual, mom that picks up at the school gates, because she works. And so there's just a lot of it's a lot of trial and tribulation, but it's funny. It's very comical. It's how she kind of handles and juggles it all and tries to do everything all at once is funny. And I'm sure a lot of working moms and dads could relate to that. Trying to kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. She's surrounded by a great entourage of people, and they're all hilarious. And she's got a lovely community of fans. And so, yeah, it's funny, and it's a quick read. It's something you'll probably pick up over a weekend and read it. And it's part of a trilogy. I mean, the goal, it was commissioned to become a, it was optioned to become a television series, like a sitcom, before I even wrote the book. So that'll probably be my next project, is to try to get that off the ground. But otherwise, there is two other books in the works as part of a trilogy of the story. So you basically follow this woman, her name is Stephanie Bloom, around trying to make her dreams come true, but all the while having a family in tow. And
When did you decide to write a book? And with that decision, was it like straight away, cool, I'm starting? Or was there any, oh, I can't do this. What am I thinking? Am I mad? What was the whole process there before you actually got into writing?
oh. That I was petrified,
Okay.
because I have ADHD, so to focus on one thing is like, it's like I have to hyper focus. So to write a whole book, I mean, look, I wrote 54 episodes of my television series, but you're taping them, four or five at a time every month. So I had, and I found that process like similar but different. Writing a book was such a learning curve for me, because continuity, picking up the threads of all the characters, building the characters, the fact that they were fictionalized was actually a bit easier for me, because I was able to take myself out of myself and build these characters and give them more drama or more humility or more comedy. And so it was a really interesting experience for me. And of course, I couldn't do this on my own. I had a friend of mine, I have a friend called Ruth Elkins, who originally I thought when we were going to, I was going to have her ghostwrite it for me because she's an excellent writer. She was a former journalist at the Times. Then she moved to the Daily Mail as an editor. Like, she's proper professional. And because she also knows my voice, you know. But then it ended up that we were more back and forth sharing it because it just felt more natural to do it that way. And you got more of my voice in the story as opposed to it being ghostwritten. Okay. I wanted my voice in there, even though I'm narrating the story as, you know, as a fictional character. We needed to have that in there. So it became a teamwork, and it was great. And I was introduced through the year to various different people in the industry, one of them being Nancy Lamb, who is a veteran author herself. She's in her, I want to say she's in her late 70s now, and she's written over 40 bestsellers in that genre. And so she edited the book for me before we even went out to look for publishers. So the book was kind of already in a professional state. And we had major changes to make. You know, COVID changed the way people were reading books. We needed to incorporate the fact that that was a massive pandemic in the world, you know, and you can't not forget that it changed also the way people live. And also what had happened in the book was probably an offshoot of COVID a little bit. So you didn't want to dismiss that. So we had to add that in. So there, it was a process. If I tell you years and years of learning, and you know, as an adult, and then there's also as a mother, you know, like being able to learn a new craft and actually, you know, write a book was for me a huge endeavor. You know, I do touch wood again that the book does great out there in the ether and the commercial startups, but you know. For me, as a human being, that accomplishment is, I feel fulfilled having written it. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to her that I didn't say in the book. And there's so much more to the relationships that she has that I know with her character can build upon. Hence why there's a second book and a third book coming out. So, well, not coming out. I'm still writing it. But ultimately it will come out.
It's amazing. I'm so excited to read it and hear all about it, or read it and experience it. And so potentially you said it would be commissioned for television.
Yeah. So that'll be another chapter in my life, because that'll be a big, I'd like to be involved in that in some way, even overseeing it or, you know, I have a little bit of experience in the TV world. So I do want to be involved in it somehow, but I don't know, maybe that's a new chapter of my life. I mean, I love where my journey is taking me through the music, and that's always been the mainstay for me. The book, I'm going to be doing an audiobook. I'm narrating the audiobook. I'm in the studio in February to create the audiobook, and I've already written the soundtrack for the book. So technically, the book is a musical. So what will happen is when you listen to the audiobook, which will be released also this summer, it will have a whole soundtrack of brand new music integrated into the book. Each character basically has a song in their own style and genre of music, which is exciting. And what makes it slightly more exciting is that everyone who would have purchased the book already, so in February, or even the ebook, will have a QR code to scan and they'll get the music for free, even if they've already purchased the book. So that's happening this summer. The soundtrack has already been recorded by me and other vocalists, obviously playing the characters. So that's also obviously why the TV show is hopefully going to happen, because, you know, it's a musical and I just don't know. It's like a new, exciting thing for me. But one thing at a time. Book first.
Yes.
Let's focus on the
What's the
book.
name of it? One thing
Book
at a
first.
time.
I'm here. Now you can see it's like, if you were just listening to this interview for 5 minutes, you'd be like, wow, she really does have ADHD. She is all
No,
over
no,
the
no. Let's not
freaking
label things. I hate labeling things because there's negative perceptions around them. So let's throw that
Oh,
out.
no. ADHD is my superhuman power, babe.
Oh, there we
Honestly,
go.
I think it presses me to move forward
Oh,
and
well, that's
just
good
keep
because a lot
doing
of
what I
people
do.
use it as a crutch, is that, oh, they've got ADHD means they can't do this, or they got ADHD means they can't do that. So as
I think
long
I'm the opposite. I
Okay.
think it's because I have it that I do what I do, and I feel like I've developed a lot of tools in my life in order to overcome it that were unknown to me.
Yes.
And now I'm like, well, yeah, I got this, So I look at it as a positive, which is kind of cool, I think. I don't know. Ask my husband. He knows better what it's like to live with me.
I can relate because I think you and I are on the same level because I'm exactly the same anyway.
I think so too. That's why we hit it off.
Yeah. This last question I asked you last time. So I love this question. I know it was different the previous time, and I know if I had to ask you this in 2 minutes, 2 years, 2 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. And I recognize that because there's millions of them and it's very difficult to choose. I'm not saying favorites, but if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
They'll probably be the same I said the last time, but I'd be curious. You should listen to what I said a couple of years ago. But Guns N' Roses, Diana Ross, Prince. This might not have been on the list before, but like The Weeknd or Dua Lipa, like someone current, and Mark Ronson.
If I remember
I know he's
correctly,
not
it's
an artist per se, he's a producer, but he
producer,
is an artist. I mean, he plays every freaking instrument and he turns everything into gold, and I'm a huge fan of him,
So I think it's quite different to last time. I'll have to check though, but awesome.
Okay.
So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
My first hit record didn't happen until I turned 40. And I think that the answer and the mantra I've been pressing forward has always been, it's never too late to live your dream. And it's also never too late to repot yourself. I mean, life is too short to stay in the same lane the whole time, I feel, no matter how passionate. I mean, people should really try to follow their dreams and follow their passions if it's possible. I also think that I'm a big proponent of staying healthy and being fit. And another message for me would be to always keep moving. Just keep on dancing. Keep on dancing, keep on moving, because I think dancing brings happiness, movement brings health. And I just think that the world would be a better place with happier people if everyone just kept dancing with each other.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.